This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Thursday, March 15th, 2012. I'm Caleb Brown. It's been stunning to watch the rapid shift in opinions on Afghanistan. Long after the public soured on the mission, Republicans running for president now seem to recognize that turning against it at least is no longer a net loss politically. Malou Innocent, foreign policy analyst at the Cato Institute, comments. To witness the last month or so in our adventure in Afghanistan would be to watch a pretty incredible turnaround, both in sort of just under the surface tensions breaking out and in a bunch of prominent Republicans, some might call conservatives, turning around and making some pretty dramatically different statements about their view of the U.S. mission in Afghanistan than they had held for the previous decade.
Yeah, I think you're right in terms of just the series of events that we've been seeing in Afghanistan over the past several months, arguably since 08-09, but really just in the past several months. There's just been a rapid deterioration of the mission in terms of the long-term strategy of creating a government in Kabul that has the monopoly on the use of force throughout the country in terms of the training mission for the Afghan security forces. These events really sort of signal the underlying problem with the mission in terms of what do we hope to achieve? Do we have the resources to achieve it? And will we be willing to change course if we don't see those gains? It doesn't appear as if the Obama administration is willing to change course, at least for now. There could be another event that further unravels this conflict and further jeopardizes the mission. But it is interesting to see the surge of opinion moving in the opposite direction. I think you had people who were sort of on the fence in terms of the mission. They knew that it was the good war, the war we must fight, where allegedly the 9/11 attacks were planned, even though they were planned in Spain and Germany and Florida and elsewhere. So I think it's a little bit it's partly gratifying because we've been talking about the need to scale down the mission in Afghanistan for some time, but it's also horrendous what we've been seeing over the past several months.
One of the conflicts that you point to is the fact that it is explicitly the U.S. military's job to protect Afghan civilians. And over the past 3 years, we've seen a steady, pronounced escalation in the deaths of Afghan civilians.
Right. It almost reminds me of the U.S. government's goal of expanding home ownership to Americans. The eventual end state of that policy has been that more Americans have been evicted from their homes due to foreclosure crisis and everything. So this is sort of what we see now in Afghanistan, is this idea that we're going to win the hearts and minds of the people and protect them from insurgents. And sadly, as you bring up in your question, 2011 was the fifth straight year in which civilian casualties rose. There's a great deal of ambivalence, if not anger, amongst a great deal of the Afghan public towards our presence. You just had Afghan President Hamid Karzai demanding U.S. troops withdraw from all villages and just stay on their bases. You just had the Taliban announce that they're going to break off peace talks with the United States. These are sort of issues that really go to the heart of the counterinsurgency mission, which was to protect the people. And our men and women in uniform have fought bravely, I think, overall. I think it's unfortunate that these sort of incidents, shine a harsh light on them. But they've been put under duress. They've had to endure multiple deployments. We've seen an increase in the number of mental health issues, suicides, post-traumatic stress disorder, double amputees, triple amputees. There are certainly, an increase in civilian casualties. There's been an increase in coalition deaths. It is a very horrible situation that we've been seeing, and I would hope that the president would begin to expedite the withdrawal and move more in the direction of his vice president, Joe Biden, who initially said, years ago, that we should have moved to a counterterrorism mission. It's not a panacea. It's not easy. We still have an issue with logistics and supply chains, but still, in terms of the number of people who've been killed, in terms of the resources expended, it's time to wind down the mission.
But instead, we have a president who, along with British PM David Cameron, have pledged to stay the course, to continue this mission. And as you and I talked about earlier, for quite a while, the people who were believed to be the cooler heads on the Afghan mission or those who were urging to stay the course? Don't get concerned about the bumps in the road. And as you point out, you know, what road?
Yeah, we're off the road. We're on the beaten path. We're in the water now. It's really tragic. I mean, when you look at sort of what is the long-term mission now, at least, beyond 2014, we hope to have a government, again, that can, you know, again, have the monopoly on the use of force. It's the definition of a state, really, a legitimate state, at least. But you're looking at, you know, Hamid Karzai's government is incredibly unpopular, very corrupt. The Afghan National Police, they have a reputation for desertion and rapaciousness. You have the Afghan National Army. Their performance and effectiveness is very much questionable. I think there's also, again, you know, the training mission that we have set out for the Afghans is premised on this notion of trust. And the longer you have sort of this tension between the Afghans and the American forces and the sort of level of this wanton violence that we've been seeing over the past month, several months, I think that definitely throws into question not only should we be there, but in terms of the long term, how are we going to be able to fund something that we deem to be sort of morally questionable? I don't think a lot of people have asked that question. I think many people are focused on sort of the economics of the war, which is fine. You know, we've been spending at least $12 billion a year on the Afghan National Army alone. Going forward after 2014, it's supposed to be about $4 billion to fund the Afghan National Army and police. The Afghan government has said that they have real no way of paying this. They're going to maybe pay for a marginal portion of that. So, I mean, on the moral issues, on the economic issues, no one has really tried to grapple with these sort of systemic problems. And as you say, I mean, these are sort of just bumps on the road. You know, these are just minor problems. And, you know, just you know, calmer heads will prevail. And it's ludicrous. It's sad. People aren't looking at reality. If you understand what's happening on the ground, if you talk to people who are on the ground, the situation has gotten very much worse. And I think for many Afghans, in terms of the civilian casualties, they're almost used to it. You see a little bit of the outrage, but it's almost sort of shock in a way, in some respects.
One of the most important metrics in this whole mission in Afghanistan, just the idea of this hearts and minds being won to the U.S. side. You can't really measure that, but we've seen some pretty clear-cut examples in the last month that have said this measure is clearly moving in the wrong direction, or perhaps it's been moving in the wrong direction for a long time, and only now we're seeing evidence of it. Is that why there's been this rapid turnaround in opinion among Republicans on this mission?
Well, I mean, I certainly would think that for some Republicans, it's a political issue. You know, an incumbent in an election year, this is a great way to sort of cut them off at the knees. But I think there are some conservatives who really do have a overarching skepticism toward intervention in general, whether that be in Iraq or Iran or Afghanistan or Somalia or pick your country, your Muslim country. but I think that, you know, recently what we've seen is a tarnishing of the mission, a tarnishing, and sadly, as a result of the latest incident, tarnishing of the troops as a result of, you know, what's been happening. Also, you know, as you say, there's no real way to quantify winning hearts and minds, especially if, you know, an allegiance exists in someone's head. if they're willing to offer information to a coalition troop that might be specious, such as the tribal elder in the next village stole my goat, and therefore I would like you to redress this grievance. These are sort of the jump tips that we've been getting, and unfortunately we've been having night raids against the wrong homes. You know, intelligence can be faulty. There could be deeper tribal rivalries. So, I mean, even the intelligence on the hearts and minds that we're getting may not be the most accurate. That and the insurgents live there. They live in this region. They will always be there. And this is sort of the definition of a guerrilla insurgency, of a guerrilla war. You know, they fight when the circumstances and the conditions are most favorable. They decline to fight when conditions are not. They melt back easily into the population. And so, again, this sort of hearts and minds strategy was always very much flawed. It required, you know, the best amount of resourcing, the greatest amount of patience and time. And I don't think we really ever had that, whether it was 08 or 01. It's really demanding a lot of the troops. It's demanding a lot of the American public. It's demanding a lot of the Afghans.
Malu Innocent is a foreign policy analyst at the Cato Institute. You can read more of her work on Afghanistan and Pakistan at cato.org.